Hello, Jordan.
What's up, Michael?
This is going to be an episode of all episodes. I have a great feeling. We're going heavy Q&A, heavy rapid fire. Do we have anything interesting before we dive into Q&A?
No, because we're recording back-to-back podcasts right now. If you're watching the video, you're seeing we're wearing the exact same clothes as the last podcast.
I wear this even week to week.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're doing this back-to-back because this is literally less than a minute after we ended the last episode. I still have the little cough sucking on my Ricolas, and that's it.
Yeah, that was a fun episode. It was a fun episode. We had a 10-minute segment about Leonardo DiCaprio and his infatuation with younger women that I cut out. So you can blame me, not Jordan.
It was a great one. It was like...
Not really.
I thought it was great, and... There was the end of, you can tell from the last episode, as soon as I asked, what do you think of the Lumen device? that was the end of that discussion. And we were just laughing because Mike was livid. I was like, what do you think of the Lumen device?
It was such a good transition. It was hilarious.
Okay. So want to go right into Q&A?
Yeah, we'll dive straight in. But just from a scheduling perspective, we're hitting back to back because... There's upcoming travel, there's things going on, and we're just locking in that we are going to upload every single week in 2023 and beyond.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, let's dive in.
All right. Someone asked, how can I explain to someone that starvation mode isn't a thing?
I'll let you lead with this one.
Okay. Well, so there's, whenever I talk about this, there's always the debate over, well, what is starvation mode? So let's start with that. From what I see on social media, there are two main discussions about what starvation mode is or is not. So what I was brought up with in the fitness industry and what is still a very mainstream belief is that if you don't eat enough calories, then your body will somehow go into this mysterious thing known as starvation mode because you're not eating enough. And as a result of being in this quote-unquote starvation mode, your body will somehow store more body fat because you are not eating enough. And that is fucking stupid. That makes no sense because no one in the history of the entire world ever got fat from starving, ever. And a lot of people will be like, well, it's different. Like, well, this person's only eating 1,200. I'm like, well, 1,200 calories a day and they're gaining weight. I'm like, well, then... And they're in starvation mode. Like, well, what about someone eating 600 calories a day? And like, well, that's different. I'm like, well, how is that different?
Not only that, but the 1200 is anecdote based on self-reported data. Like, look at every metabolic ward study where calories were controlled.
And
by the way, that's the only definition of starvation mode that I'm aware of. So I'm very excited to hear this new second one.
Yeah. So there's this new second one. And this has come, by the way, with the rise of reverse dieting. So this second definition has come from with the rise of reverse dieting because of people figuring out about metabolic adaptation. I get asked about metabolic adaptation all the time. And people are so worried about it that their metabolism is adapting. And so basically what has happened is people will say, well, then how come when people reverse diet, they continue to lose weight even though they increase their calories? It's like, okay, well, that's actually a good question. When people are reverse dieting and they continue to lose weight, let's say you have someone legitimately eating 1,200 calories a day, like legit, they're eating 1,200 calories a day. And then they increase their calories to 1,500 and they continue to lose weight. That doesn't mean they're not still in a calorie deficit. They could continue to lose weight because they're still in a calorie deficit. And oftentimes they're like, well, how come they stopped losing weight at 1,200? Well, sometimes what will happen is when you're eating way too few calories, your body will be very stressed. Cortisol will rise. You'll hold on to water for a little bit, whether it's a day, 2 days, 3 days, a week, 2 weeks can even happen where the weight scale and the weight will not go down. But that doesn't mean you're not losing fat. It just means the scale weight isn't changing because you're holding on to water. Eventually, it would go away. But when you increased calories to 1,500, cortisol went down. You were still in a calorie deficit. So then you started to lose weight. And it appears as though now you're losing weight more quickly on higher calories. That's not the case. It's just you just reduced stress. So water went away. and you're just showing that you're actually still losing fat while still being in a calorie deficit.
And you're describing a scenario where adherence is perfect at 1200.
Exactly.
When this is the outlier. That's not the norm. The norm is you're eating 1200, but you're really not adhering to 1200. You're eating 1200 a few days in a row, and then you have a high calorie day, and then there's some willful blindness. Then you eat 1200 for a few more days, and then there's the weekend comes along. There's a couple high calorie days. You're only focusing on the days you're actually eating 1200. You're actually netting much higher than that. So then, when you reverse, or just when you increase your calories, you're better able to adhere to the higher calorie intake, which actually leads to your total weekly intake being lower on 1500 than it was on 1200. That's how the majority of people who lose more weight when they increase their calories, that's how they're doing it.
That's right. And some people say that, so because when you reduce your calories, your metabolism goes down, that when you then increase your calories, your body is more likely to store fat because your metabolism is down now. And this can happen in people who severely restrict calories for a significant period of time where, like, and I'm talking about prisoner of war status. I'm talking about legitimate anorexia, where they actually legitimately damage their metabolism. And then once they start eating more, they will put on a little bit more body fat. This is a super, super small percentage of the population. And it's also, for the vast majority of people, a relatively quick fix for their metabolism. Their metabolism recovers very soon thereafter. So it's really not that big of a deal. So these are the two different definitions of starvation mode. One is the one that you and I have both heard our whole lives. The other is that starvation mode being it's easier to add body fat once you then reduce your calories enough and your metabolism is lower. Either way, the first one is just entirely, completely false, blatantly false. The second one has glimmers of truth in it, but it's way overplayed and there's more fear-mongering around it that you really have to worry about.
Yeah. There's also a weird element of, like, you know, convincing someone of something that they don't want to believe. Like, the person who's asking this question to you, obviously, I'm guessing, is looking for a way to explain this to somebody else. But mm-hmm. if that other person, like, I have no interest in changing someone else's opinion because I think that they're wrong and I'm right. If they're maybe in the middle and trying to understand, then having these conversations is fruitful and productive. But there's how often can you change someone's opinion about something when they don't want their opinion to be changed, especially on a hot button issue like, you know, fitness and nutrition is these days?
That's why whenever people say that and say, like, I can't change their mind, I'll offer to pay them $10,000 to come live with me for 2 weeks. And I'll say, all right, fine. Come live with me for 2 weeks. I'll pay $10,000. I'll cover your expenses, all this stuff. But I get to see every single thing you put in your mouth. And if you don't lose weight in these 2 weeks, then you owe me $10,000 and all that. And no one's taking me up on that. So if you want, you could try that and, like, run a little experiment. You could document it. That would make some great content. No one's taking me up on that yet, though.
I had a client, you and I have talked about this a lot, this, like, strategy in general, but I had a client who, measurements were coming down, was recomping a little bit, but, like, wasn't losing as much body fat as he should have been on that intake. And then had him start sending daily food logs for a little more accountability around it. And after two, three weeks of that, not incredible consistency on the daily food logs, but scale still wasn't really moving. And so then I went with, okay, we're going to do a 3-day challenge. I want you to send me a photo of every single thing you eat. Like, you know, if it's a cup of water, I want a picture. If it's two cashews, I want a picture, like, everything just for 3 days that you're putting in your mouth. And in a number of days, like, scale starts moving. Which is,
yeah. Shocker.
Yeah. But, and it's a win-win, right? Like, client's pumped because client wants to see progress. And even if it means, like, okay, there might've been something here or there that I maybe wasn't tracking with 100% accuracy. Amazing. Oh, and I used another one of our classics that we haven't talked about in years, which is, hey, What brand or what company makes your food scale?
Oh my God, I completely forgot about that one. That was genius.
Mm-hmm.
That was such a genius question. Oh my God, I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah. Because then it's not like, hey, are you using a food scale? It's like, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, hey, who
makes your food scale? Wait, that's a good one.
Oh, I didn't get one yet. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and this guy actually did have one, so it was cool because he was like, oh, this company.
And sends a picture of it.
Yeah.
Does it matter if you drink water consistently throughout the day or just do big gulps?
Love questions like this. Who asked? Shout out.
Will save for travel.
Shout out Will Save for Travel. Let's go.
I never know which questions you're going to like and not like. I'm actually very surprised that you really like this one.
it's kind of funny. By big gulps, do you think a big sip or like big, like 7-Eleven, like big gulps?
I'm assuming she doesn't mean going to 7-Eleven and filling up a big gulp with water. Or just to have a big gulp for 7-Eleven.
You know, I actually, the standard answer that I think most would expect is what matters most is your total water intake throughout the day. And you know, that's what counts. I disagree. I think there's a lot of merit for a lot of people to kind of consistently sipping water throughout the day. Because I've heard so many people who don't like drinking water, quote unquote, I don't like drinking water, were people who, when they drank water, they would drink like 10, 12, 14, 16 ounces at a time. They just chug their water and they always felt really full and felt really uncomfortable as a result of drinking water. It's like, well, how are you drinking water? Well, I slam a 16 ounce cup. It's like, well, yeah, then you're going to feel a little bit full and you're going to feel that liquid rumbling in your belly. Like, I think for people who struggle with getting enough water, having it nearby and drinking it consistently and sipping it consistently is beneficial. There's also something to be said for that population to getting enough electrolytes and getting enough carbohydrates, which are also going to like technically allow you to store more water in your body, which is going to allow you to drink more water and which is anecdotally going to increase hunger or not increase hunger, increase thirst.
Love that.
Do you have a strong opinion on that question?
Water is one of the things where I would say it's probably very important to have consistency as opposed to like just trying to get it all in with some big gulps.
Yeah.
Every now and then. I mean, hydration status is so, it varies so consistently throughout the day.
Great point.
Right. It's like, and with even a small amount of dehydration, you get real negative health effects. Now, on any given day, it's not a major issue, but I do wonder about if you're consistently having this buildup of negative health effects or negative side effects from being dehydrated more consistently than you are hydrated. I would imagine that could add up over time and how it could affect you negatively in many, many ways. So I think consistently staying hydrated is probably super important for so many things, performance, digestion, health, all of that. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It also reminds me of the question about, can you bank your steps? And you talked about that from the psychological perspective of knowing a percentage of the population would not take steps for 4 or 5 days. And then in 1 or 2 days, try to get all their steps in for the week. And I'm applying that logic to spreading water out throughout the day versus having big gulps, like not drinking any water and knowing you wanted to have, you know, 80 ounces, let's say, and it's 8 o'clock at night. And then you're trying to get your 80 ounces in before bed, like not going to go as well. It's going to be hard to maintain that. Sleep quality is going to suffer. You're going to have to get up during the night, maybe multiple times, use the restroom. Like there's a lot of benefits to kind of sipping throughout the day.
There's also something where it's like, if we look at food and meal frequency, you can legitimately train your body to get hungry at certain times and certain frequencies throughout the day, right? Like, so if you normally eat 3 or 4 meals a day at certain times, then you might start to get a little bit of a headache if you haven't eaten yet. But after a couple of weeks of eating differently, you can completely change that. where you can, your body can, you can train your body to be hungry at certain times based on the schedule you follow. If you're dehydrated, if you're dehydrated, you can't train your body to like not have these negative side effects from not drinking sufficient water over any period of time. It's not like you can say like, okay, well, I usually don't drink water for this period of time, so I'm not going to get a headache or that's not how it works. It's like you need a certain amount of water in order to be hydrated on a consistent basis. And if you are not, then there will be immediate negative effects as a result of it, regardless of whether or not you then get hydrated later in the day. I think it's very important to do your best to do it consistently. All right, Georgia Overbeck. My lower body is very hamstring dominant. How can I switch focus to quads/glutes?
Interesting.
Knew it. I knew you'd like this one.
I was expecting you to say, how can I switch my focus to quads, not quads/glutes. And glutes. I mean, it really depends on what the goal is here, right? If like the goal is to have as much muscle as possible and you also want more balance, continue to train your hamstrings at like more of a maintenance volume and add more training volume to your quads and glutes. In addition to upping the volume, having body parts that you care about more earlier in the workout and prioritizing them that way within each session is going to help you grow them more. So having more, you know, more quad dominant exercises and even like glute isolation exercises earlier in the workout, is going to be beneficial. Train the muscles more that you want to grow and don't train the muscles as much that you would rather not grow.
You know, what's interesting is I've had this question crop up more frequently recently. And I even had a conversation about it with a guy who works out in the same gym as me. And he definitely grew up in the same era as you and I did of strength and conditioning, in which everything when we were younger was about the posterior chain.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything, the number of articles written on the posterior chain and how everyone is quad dominant and knee dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So they went with it. And when I talk about fitness industry being on a pendulum of extremes, the fitness industry just swung to it the other side that was like, we're only going to train the back. And you can find so many articles of people being like, you should train the posterior chain to the anterior chain at like a 2-to-1 ratio. Like you should be training your back 2 times as much as your front. And they completely swung the other direction. And it was funny because at that time, there were real issues with people only or majorly training the anterior chain, like the front of their body, like the, whether it was the pecs and the shoulders or the quads and all that, and not doing anything for the back. There were some real postural issues, injury issues, all of that. Now I'm seeing a lot of issues with the backside being way overdeveloped and the front side way underdeveloped. And I was talking about this with a guy in the gym because he saw me doing front squats and he was like, what the fuck? He was like, dude, your technique is so good. He's like, I can't do that. Da, 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 da. And he's like, I think what really screwed me up is like, I've only been training my posterior chain. He's like, my RDLs are great. My cleans are great. All this stuff. But he's like, but I can't squat for the life of me. And I was like, well, do you squat? And he's like, no, I've only done like this just because I've been told that I need to do my posterior chain. It's like, man, it really did swing. And I think it's starting to come back a little bit now. And it will be interesting. That was very much when like postural and corrective exercise was the kingpin in the fitness industry. That was mm-hmm. like when all that stuff was really making a name. Now I feel like bodybuilding has really come back in full force and muscle hypertrophy and getting bigger is the big thing right now. I do think that the next one will probably go back to powerlifting or maybe Olympic lifting. I think we'll see a shift towards there within the next few years. But to answer the question, it's just if you want to work on your quads and glutes, then I don't know, lunges would be a good idea. Bulgarian split squats would be a good idea. I will say, you said, you know, go to a maintenance volume. I think it's good to have like some numbers. You could do 1/3 of as much volume as you're currently doing and maintain very easily. Mm-hmm. So like just drop your volume for your posterior, for your hamstrings by 2/3, mm-hmm. and then increase the volume from the other exercises and you're good.
Do you see a lot of, because when you were, like I said, I wasn't imagining this person to say glutes were suffering as well. Do you see a lot of people with overdeveloped hamstrings and underdeveloped glutes?
No. I just think that's probably coming from and specifically more women than anything, really wanting to grow their glutes. And it's like almost like not enough.
She's probably decently balanced, but sees like, you know, 50 BBLs a day in her feed,
yes.
and might have like a slightly unrealistic expectation of hamstring to glute, like visual ratios.
Yeah. Seeing all these like highly edited and
twisted sideways. Outrated.
Yeah. Like all the stuff where it's like, that's just not what a normal butt looks like. There's a little bit of droop in the bottom of it. Like there's like, unless your genetics are insane, like, or you've got a BBL or whatever it is, or you've gotten a great editor on Photoshop, like there's usually a little bit of a little jiggle.
Yeah, well, jiggle and like this, like butts don't look that big relative to waist and hamstrings.
Yeah.
Like, and a lot of it just has to do with positioning, that like hip move that, mm-hmm. I don't know when, yep. who started that or how, but like that makes it look completely different. That might be, you know, the like,
it's so uncomfortable. I tried like, doing it.
What, Instagram versus reality things over the years?
Yeah.
That might be the one that I like the most, that actually like highlights something more meaningful.
Yeah.
Just like standing there side angle, butt shot compared to like hip turn, you know, influencer pose butt shot and the difference.
Yeah, where their hip is just jutting out like they're doing like a kettlebell windmill or something. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
That moves second to Turkish get up in my books, but yeah, we can still use it to make a point.
Let's see.
What's up with fake teeth? Did we talk about that on the podcast?
Like veneers?
Yeah. Did we? I might have brought this up on the podcast. If so, we can just skip this.
I'm the wrong person to ask if we've spoken about this before. I don't know, but I'm more than happy to talk about it again. Or yeah, talk about a period.
What's up with them?
Dude, I think it's just another step in the, or not, like, yeah, another step in the, people are seeing all these like crazy white straight teeth and they're like, you know what, fuck it. Like, rather than putting braces on or all that, I'll just like get this done and my teeth will look perfect. But from my experience seeing them, very few people's actually look real. Like, mm-hmm. I can almost always tell when someone has veneers because they look so perfect, mm-hmm. and they're so white and they're so straight, and it's just, and they, there's like, I don't know, you can tell immediately. Mm-hmm. And some of them are like thick. Some of them look like they've got like a, what's it called? Like they've got those fake teeth in their mouth, you know, like chompers. Looks like they've got like chompers in their mouth.
I see.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like a fake mouth, like a Halloween costume type of thing.
Yeah.
So it's just a cosmetic procedure that people, you know, similar to like a boob job or like a BBL or like a, I don't know what or guys
hair
get, like calf implants
dudes.
Or yeah, hair transplant. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's health benefits to it. I might be wrong. I actually would imagine there's like health risks. So like I'm pretty, don't they shave their teeth down like to in like crazy shit? Mm-hmm. It looks like vampire like stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I believe so. I believe they get shaved down to pegs and then they like put them on. But they must be high margin because I see advertisements like cosmetic surgery at dental offices. Dental offices must make their money on cosmetics compared to like cleanings, because I don't know, at least the dentist I am going to.
I would imagine. I mean, what other cosmetic stuff do they do?
Yeah, I guess that's the main one. I don't know. Any kind of like elective.
Oh, like braces. Oh no, but that's an orthodontist.
Yeah, I guess it's just veneers.
Those are expensive. But now, man, did you have braces growing up?
Yeah.
Dude. Have you seen, like, the technology for braces now is so much better than it was when we were kids.
Everyone just does Invisalign?
I think they do Invisalign. I don't even fully know, but yeah,
they don't have like a bracket, like, you know, stuck to each tooth and the bands, and then you tighten them. Like, what color bands do you want? I'm like, brown and blue alternating. And my mom's like, and I'm like,
you got brown and blue.
I was getting all kinds of colors. Yeah, there's like I think it was actually like a silver and blue because that was my high school's like colors, but then I don't know. Too much chocolate milk, you know? I'm saying.
I wanted yellow, and my mom would never let me get yellow. She's like, it's going to look like you have yellow teeth.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I just got blue. But, dude, that was the worst.
It seems like it's part of a hyper-focus on, like, perceived physical beauty. I can't tell if it's anti-age or if it's beauty. Like, even, you know, facial surgery and hair transplants, a good one that you bring up, but some combination of like wanting to appear youthful and also more attractive, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, man, I feel like almost everything could be in some way seen as a way to appear more attractive.
But surgeries and none of these things have, like, you could say that, oh, well, someone who loses 50 pounds just wants to be more attractive. It's like, mm-hmm. but that also comes
there's real
with
health benefits. Yeah.
Real health benefits. You want to build more muscle. You want to get stronger so you'll be better looking. Real health benefits. This is like mimicking that, the vanity aspect, without any health benefits and potentially like minor health risks. And by the way, I'm asking this because I'm genuinely curious in your position. I don't fully understand it. Like, I lack social awareness in that way.
My thing is, my opinion on like any of that stuff, whether it's boob jobs or hair transplants or veneers, is like, I'm not going to judge anyone for doing it. Like, if that's what you want to do, like, go for it. I support you. And if that makes you happy, great. I do encourage really asking why. Like, why do I want to do this? And do you think that the reason why you want to do this is going to make you happy that you've done it throughout your life? That's what I would ask. So like, for example, if my daughter ever asks like, hey, I want to get a boob job or a nose job or whatever it is, like if she inherits my nose and she wants to get a nose job, like I'm definitely not going to fund it. I'm not going to be like, yeah, daddy will pay for that. Like, nope, absolutely the fuck not. Like, when you are an adult and you make your own money, and if you want to do this, then absolutely. Like, I support you and I will always love you. I would like to talk about why you think that you want to get this and why like you think it will make you happier and all of that. But I'm definitely not one to think less of someone because they have that stuff. But I do think it says more about an insecurity that I would generally like to see them overcome as opposed to mask, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I have no negative thoughts towards anyone who does any of that stuff. It's more just like, let's talk about it.
Upstream from the insecurity, I want to take it even a step further. Like, it seems like, and I'm not, oh, social media is the devil, da da da, but beauty standards have changed over time. And it seems like a lot of the elective surgeries are currently to look like a filter. Like a lot of these like filters that whether it's like waist shrinking, hips bigger, like face contortion,
teeth
symmetry, teeth whitening, cheekbone, nose size, like a lot. And I don't really know what the exact surgeries are, but it just seems like there's some, I don't know, golden ratios, whatever. Like, I remember the golden ratio of like biceps, calves, like shoulders to waist, like that kind of stuff. But I would imagine that kind of stuff exists with facial and even like different kinds of body symmetry. And then basically I'm saying that the insecure, like using your daughter, if she gets your nose example, the fact that
you think I have a big nose. Okay.
The fact the fact that that would be perceived as less attractive and that a small nose would be perceived as more attractive, I don't understand. And I actually think, like, there are certain things that are biologically ingrained in us, right? Like, that stem from fertility and yada yada. But the nose thing, I don't understand, because when did having like a tiny nose become an attract? Like, that doesn't seem like an evolutionary thing from 6,000 years ago that was like purposeful, that we now think like a smaller nose is more attractive. That seems like a thrust upon us through filters and et cetera. Or maybe I just don't understand or have weird taste.
I don't know. Who knows? I mean, I don't even know where to go with that. I definitely feel like you're right in terms of social media filters. I think online dating, in terms of, like, you know, with the swiping and all of that, seeing some of the people on there like with clearly outrageously filtered pictures, I'm like, God damn. Like,
yeah,
when they meet you in person, they're not going to recognize you at all. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that some people are getting these surgeries to try and look like the way the filter has them look. Mm-hmm. Like, they're literally on their Instagram changing filters and like, oh my God, I like how I look here way better. How can I smooth my skin out to look like it's, you know, it's like this in this filter? It's like, holy shit. And, you know, for years, I think it's been a progression over time, like makeup, for example. Makeup is done to make you look different than how you actually look, to make it like, you know, skin is more clear and smooth and there aren't blemishes and all of that. And then, well, cool. So now you don't even need makeup. Now you could do whatever and we could have a filter that goes on. And it's like, oh, well, what if we had a surgery to make that happen? It's just the natural progression of making things easier to look how you want to look. So yeah, I mean, it just seems like it's a natural progression. But it is, I think there is something that I think in some ways it can be, it's unique at the very least, and it's reminiscent of how far technology has come. There are many, many positives, but
like what?
Just showing how far technology has come.
Okay.
I don't know. Because the so thing that is, positive. I'm trying not to be like, I've
You're
never had
judgmental.
A plastic surgery.
Sorry, I didn't. Right? So when you said many benefits, I thought you meant of filter culture, not of surgeries. We're on the same page that we're not judging the people who elected to get surgeries.
Yeah, yeah,
we're
yeah.
all a like, cohesive family.
I know I have friends and colleagues who've had surgeries and
cool.
And I've spoken to them about it because I wanted their opinion on it, and we're friendly enough to have that discussion. And they're like, I'm so glad I did it. And who knows? Maybe that's like whatever bias where they already are, like the sunk cost where they already put in the money and they change it and they can't reverse it, or maybe they can reverse it, but like they just, who knows, maybe that's part of it. But the conversations, and I've had both conversations, some people love it and some people severely regret it, but yeah, I it's hard for me to not say I really wish we could dive into the insecurity aspect and work on the insecurity as opposed to masking it. But I need to make it clear. It's like, that's not me judging anyone for doing it. It's like, that's just where my heart is. It's like, I want to talk about the insecurity and how do we overcome it as opposed to fixing it type of a thing. Mm. Like, for example, if they're like I spoke about in a YouTube video recently, like my biggest insecurity is my height for sure. If someone could like tap me with a wand and say, all right, you're going to grow 6 inches all of a sudden, and there will be no negative benefit, no negative effects, no nothing, I don't think I would do it. Like, if I could go back and change my entire life, like, if I could, everything would be the same, but the only thing that was different was changing my height, I don't think I would.
You wouldn't be you.
I wouldn't be me.
Everything would have been different.
Yeah, everything changes. Everything.
Yep. Sports selection, like everything.
How people treat you and how then you react to that. Like everything. Mm-hmm. And the ability to articulate yourself and how you're feeling and the interactions you have with people, how people view you, how you view them. Like everything changes. And I don't know.
Interesting. We'll dig into the well of the Q&A.
Braces though. Dude, I remember we had this thing in my town called Teen Center for 7th and 8th graders. Mm-hmm. And it was really only for 7th graders because by the time kids were in 8th grade, they didn't want to be there with all the 7th graders anymore. So like really only 7th graders would go. And it was this thing every, like 2 Fridays out of the month, you could go and they'd have like a dance room where all the kids would grind.
Classic.
And then they had like an arcade room. I remember, oh my God, I remember before, so this is like two separate stories. I remember before going to Teen Center the first time, I heard everyone being like, all the guys were like, are you going to grind? Are you going to grind with so-and-so? Are you going to grind? And I didn't know what grinding was. And I remember being so embarrassed. And I was at my buddy Adam Quinn's house. And there were a bunch of us, Maddie Tatko, Kevin Lockery, T-Shy Freda, all these dudes are there. And I was like, guys, what's grinding? And like, they all laughed. But then like, they had one of those like poles in the basement that like was a support beam for the house. Mm-hmm. And so they took turns like showing me grinding was on the pole. But I remember vividly, I always had my orthodontist appointments on Fridays.
Hey, hang on. Before we get into that, how ridiculous was it that that was allowed?
Dude, for like a 12-year-old like
that. Oh, you were grinding in we weren't grinding in middle school. It was our high school dances. Okay, yeah. So like 14, wow. 14, yeah, 15, 16, 17. But yes, like just
we were 13, 14.
Packed in on the dance floor.
And there were adult chaperones in the room watching us. And like there was more than just grinding going on. Like I saw it.
A lot of stories. There's a lot of stories, dude, from those dance floors.
And I'm thinking like, oh my God. Like, yeah, crazy. But I remember, because I would only have my orthodontist appointments on Fridays, and that always led to, I would go get my braces tightened, and then I would go to Teen Center, mm-hmm, and it was the worst. I was like, oh, hey, guys. It hurts. Just hurts so bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I was in so much pain, and I would get, like, the, you know, the metal bars rubbing against my cheek, and I would get, oh, God, it was terrible.
I had to wear headgear for like 6 months.
You had headgear?
I had headgear.
That you wore to school?
No, just at night.
Oh, just when you slept.
That would have been character building. I wish I would have wore headgear to school. I'd be really something today.
Oh man.
Let's hit another one. Last one.
Okay, so someone asked Lorena too. She said, workout videos, overrated or underrated? And we could talk about this from like the perspective of making content on social media.
Something's better than nothing. That's for sure. There's a lot here, right? I think there's benefit to walking the talk, talking the walk, whatever that saying is that I think I've been butchering my whole life, but like showing what you teach and what you preach and doing it. That's probably like the baseline layer, right? Which is document your own workouts. It's pretty easy to do. It doesn't take a lot of thought, set up, film a set, upload it wherever you're going to upload it. I think a step above that is, making educational videos around specific exercises, technique videos. Don't make these three mistakes, like two things to think about when doing this move. We've seen a lot of people in the mentorships see a lot of success growing Instagram following specifically and TikTok with that type of content, that style of content. Overall, I'm a fan of workout videos for content. Vlogs, like as element of vlogs, I remember voiceovers for technique was something like, you know, if you had a videographer and had, you know, I remember edits were a thing for a number of years and that people enjoyed watching was like a cinematic style workout. All of these things have merit. I think the more you can lean towards educating in a way that benefits your audience, the better that content is going to perform in the long run, and you attract the right type of person and the more likely it is to help you build your coaching business.
Yeah, I agree. And so there's so many different ways to do it. I remember the first workout videos I ever watched. I was in probably freshman year of high school or 8th grade, one of those. And I had found this guy on YouTube. His name is Arnel Ricafranca. And I think he was from sixpackabs.com or something like that.
Okay.
And I just wanted to have a six pack. And I would find his YouTube videos and he wouldn't talk. He would just like show a couple reps of every exercise, and it was like a shitty like transition from here's one exercise, and then would like swipe across the screen, and then here's the next exercise, swipe across the screen, and I would just watch those, and I would write it down, and then I would do it on my own. Now the newer version of that is having the swipe workout on Instagram, where you show one exercise, and then it's just like a brief clip, and then they can swipe, and they can go to the next one, and they can be great. I would say it's a good form of content to include. I would not make that your only form of content, number one. I think you cannot, I'm not going to say you can't, but if you're going to do that type of content, you have to remember, because now so many more people are doing that, you have to find ways to stand out.
Mm-hmm.
This is important. You have to find ways to stand out. And at this point in the game, you can't just put up 6 to 8 different like 12-second clips of you with no music in the background and just like you doing it with like, I don't know, like hearing your spouse talking in the background and like with you just doing 6 reps of something. Then like it's, no one's going to watch that.
Unless the way you stand out is you're outrageously strong or you have an outrageous physique.
Yeah, correct. I think, and what you just said is you really encourage people to educate. I think that should be the way that you stand out as the coach. I don't think you should try and use your strength or your physique as your main metrics of standing out, because eventually no one's going to care about that stuff. And either they won't care and or you're going to burn yourself out of just trying to, like, I don't think making your... Yeah, it's you're going to burn yourself out and you're going to injure yourself. I see that happening with a lot of the young powerlifters now. Every video they post is them posting an insane amount of weight. It's like, you're doing this every day. You're lifting an insane amount of weight every day. You're going to wreck yourself eventually. Just, and you're doing this because you want the engagement, you want the likes, you want the clients, because it all brings. But long term, you can't keep doing this for 10, 15, 20 years. If you could take those workout videos and, like Mike was saying, educate through these videos, whether it's doing a voiceover or explaining the right technique or what, in some way, in some capacity, properly educating them through these workout videos, that's probably the best way to stand out. And that it doesn't take much to do that. But again, I wouldn't make all of your content workout videos. I wouldn't make most of your content workout videos. I wouldn't even make a substantial percentage of your content workout videos. I would say less than 10% at most should be workout videos, and the rest should be other types of content. But if you want to include that as a supplement to otherwise very helpful educational content, then great. But you don't want to be the workout dude or the workout woman. Like you don't just want to be like, hey, I just give these workouts all the time. Like you don't want to do that, because for a number of reasons, not least of which I am seeing a woman go through this right now. She built a huge audience. I'm very friendly with her. We speak on Instagram every now and then. She built a huge audience on Instagram and YouTube, and for a while did really well. And all she did was workout videos. That's all she did. No voice, no talking. It was just videos, and they did really well. Now her engagement is trash. It's really, really bad years later. She still actually, her looks phenomenal. Her physique is insane, but people just got tired of these workouts over and over and over. And she just made a YouTube video recently talking about how she wants to start making content, like giving more insight into who she is and her beliefs and what she thinks. And now her engagement's starting to pick up again. I'm like, oh, and I wrote her a message. I was like, I'm really glad you're doing this. This is going to be very helpful for you and for your audience. When you only do workout stuff or even a majority of workout stuff and they don't know who you are, what you believe, like how many fucking workout videos can they see before they've had enough? And by that point, they have no reason to stay around because they have all these workouts. They've saved them all. They've done them all. They'll go to someone else. They don't have a connection to you. They don't know who you are, what you believe, what you like, what you don't like, any of that. It's like, and I think a lot of your content that can be educational can also include stuff about you. Even just hearing your voice, hearing you talk, giving your thoughts, you're establishing a connection with people that is you can't get through just simply a swipe workout. So I think for that reason, in and of itself, it should be a small, small, small percentage, if anything at all.
Boom. Mic drop. I got to catch a flight. Great episode. If you enjoyed, please leave a 5-star review. It helps us a ton, helps the podcast a ton. We appreciate you listening. Next week, we'll be back. next week.
See ya.